The following episode is brought to you by Rorschach. Enjoy his videos, observations, and rants at hearustalk.com/whoishe.
Entertaining talk radio, broadcast on the internet. This is hearustalk.com, the thing you do with your ears and the place to be.
Hello to all my fans. Thanks for sending me your letters. I really enjoy reading them while setting your fucking houses on fire. Keep your fucking opinions to yourself. I know I'm awesome. Enjoy the DJ New Style Show, you fucking dickheads.
Oh, snap! Yes. Yes. Welcome, welcome, one and all, to your Tuesday Night Miracle. That's right. This is the DJ New Style Show. DJNewStyleShow.com. That's where you download and subscribe and you do all the magic that you like to do. No, I do the magic. Listen, first of all, I am the maker of magic and you are the goddamn admirer and observer of my magic. Let's just get those roles clearly defined. I swirl the goddamn cauldron. I spin the purple star flame smoke into a microphone, zap it into your ears, and then the world is all right and all well. And I'm gonna fade that out. Well, my goddamn dog. This dog is a goddamn nuisance. He just escaped. The fucking dog just escaped. Now is the perfect time where I have to make a decision. Do I stop doing the show to find where the dog is in the house? Or do I just let him destroy whatever he's going to inevitably destroy? What do I actually do? I think I'm just going to let him destroy whatever it is he's going to destroy. There may be something with a little bit of glass dust on it. Like how you want to, like if you're in Oz and you want to get rid of some other inmate, you break glass up, I guess. I've seen that episode. Maybe something happened to one of his bones where a goddamn Snapple bottle became the frosting for it. And then maybe he's not interrupting the shows. Now listen, don't get the ideas toasted here. Don't get the wrong impression of me. My dog is not going to be poisoned. I will not cause the death of this dog. Time will. Whether or not I'm excited or saddened, that is something that we need to know. Teddy! Teddy! God damn it! That's what you yell. See, that's what you yell. Whenever the dog escapes, you just yell. You yell the dog's name, and you yell, God damn it. And that's really all you get. And I'm looking at my own camera feed, and I know I'm delighted, because I see my beautiful face. And the dog's been returned. He's been returned. So, you know what? Try and open a door, God damn it. Yeah, you can push a goddamn baby gate down, but can you open a door? Huh? Yeah. Try to evolve, and then maybe you'll make that happen. Huh? Try to evolve beyond the impulses of wanting to smell sweat underwear and chew everything. Try to do that, and then maybe you'll get past the goddamn door. That's what it is. But I'm looking at my own camera feed here, and I'm realizing that for those of you who watch the video, whether you're live or you actually click the streaming video link on the podcast updates, you're probably going to wonder, hey, does this guy own another fucking shirt? Because I'm really just catching, I'm just realizing that every fucking Tuesday, it seems like I'm wearing a goddamn striped green shirt. I don't know what it is. I think I've slipped into a schedule where I wear the same fucking shirt on the same day of the week. I really have no idea what the hell I'm doing with my life. I really have no idea where it all went wrong that I dress like a candy striper every Tuesday. I should be offering fucking Mounds bars to people with permanent frowns and fucking injuries. And I swear to God, in my dreams tonight, in my dreams, I will be the one who wins the fucking Jets game. But the ball will be black and white and a cockapoo. I swear to fucking God, the minute I lay my head on that pillow, I will put that fucking dog through the uprights and be a hero. I just don't know what to say. My clothes are all fucked up. Maybe I attribute it to not even being organized or motivated enough to do laundry, where I have such a fucking backlog of laundry that I'm down to my backups. I'll clean the shirts, get them to the dry cleaner. The pants are fucking jeans. They never get any kind of dirt on them. Like, really, try to get a dirty pair of jeans. It's impossible. You can literally wear a pair of jeans 150 times in a row, and they'll be as clean as they were when you tore that little translucent rectangular strip with the numbers on it. Teddy, just shut the fuck up. Really. But I've decided that now that I'm in my backups, now that I'm in the emergency section of my drawers, literally the drawers, my underwear, I'm back on boxers now. And this isn't really conversation that you want to have, like, hey, you know what, dude? I'm back on boxers. Like, guys never sit down next to each other and just fucking confess the type of underwear they're wearing. I know that whoever writes the commercials for Hanes just thinks it's fucking cool for a dude to play fucking laundry basketball with his other dude in the room in his fucking underwear. I know they paint that picture for you, but it's not a fucking reality. It's not an acceptable reality in most goddamn cases. But I'm telling you, because I host a fucking podcast, and everything that concerns or bothers me is what I'm going to talk about. And I'm back on fucking boxers now, and I don't understand how I went with them for so fucking long. I switched to boxer briefs by chance. I picked up just a pair. I needed underwear, and I was in a fucking rush, and I just took them, and I started using them, and that's all I wore from then on. And now, not having done laundry in a while, I'm back on my fucking backup set, which consists of fucking Old Navy boxers from like 2004. And I gotta tell you, I don't know how I did it for so long. I don't know how I was a boxer-only man for so long, or what kind of skills that I've acquired to make that happen. But going back to them, I've obviously lost my touch. And you may say, well, how could you lose your touch? There's no skills to lose, and you're just wearing a different garment. Well, no, because every time I piss, I have drips of piss going down my leg now. I don't know what kind of muscle control I've lost, but I've definitely lost something. Every single piss, I'm underestimating the presence of liquid now that I'm wearing fucking boxers. And I guess it just absorbs into the fucking boxers briefs. You don't even have to think about it. Maybe that's why they're so appealing to someone who's never worn them. And you accidentally wear them and you realize, hey, I've been putting in too much work. I don't have to worry about fucking piss going down, hitting my knee. Well, guess what? Every time you see me come out of a bathroom, there may be a piss drip just on my ankle, or just somewhere down. Like, it might be the perfect angle where it just goes and hits my sock, but somewhere down the leg of my fucking pants, there's a drip of piss. I don't know if it's that the boxers are so fucking old. They're literally from 2004. That, like, all elasticity, it just surrendered all hope of being a useful garment. Like, they're the type of, like, when your underwear gets so old that you probably should be wearing a belt if you're gonna wear it at all. You have to basically clamp it on you with the fucking waist of the pants. There are people tuning in, and if you want to call the show, the number is 316-768-4472, and obviously if you're a live listener, you're in the Heroes Talk chat room with the likes of Two Show Ken, Goatweed, and G-Swerve. And then, listen, I apologize. I don't mean to go on and on about my fucking underwear, okay? I don't mean to go on and on about it, but I'm just amazed that a few years away from wearing one type of garment, and you go back to it, and it's a completely different fucking thing. It basically shows the deterioration of you as a fucking person. It's such a metaphor for time passing and life. And it's fucking depressing that I have to pretend that I just washed my hands like a maniac to explain away the minuscule wet spots on one of my legs. I'm just all about washing hands. I lose all control. I just get way too enthusiastic about it. I don't like towels. I air dry by vigorously shaking my hand over a certain part of my left or right leg, depending on the day. That's where I'm at, and it's fucking depressing. And it's a depressing time. There's a lot to fucking depress you right now. In New Jersey, we're on the verge of 1 million inches of snow. Tomorrow morning, your house, if you're in New Jersey, your house will be completely covered to the chimney with snow. There will be no milk. There will be no bread. Your life, which formerly consisted of going to work and school and living in a house that you could see out of and open doors, it's over. Your life now consists of snow and being trapped in snow. Or at least that's what people will have you think. People at work will send you emails with bold red text from theweatherchannel.com saying that states of emergency have been declared and that it's such a panicky time. Don't even think about coming into work. Don't even think about leaving your house. Okay, fine, I won't. But is it really that big of a fucking deal coming off a fucking storm where we had 2 feet of snow and the warning is 6 to 10 inches? Where was the fucking email last time? The warnings were all there. It's not as though every snowstorm doesn't trigger some fucking apocalyptic reaction from everybody. How are the roads? How are the roads? They're slippery in some parts. In other parts, they're not. What do you want me to say? We live in a town where we pay fucking taxes. And we're equipped for snow. We're ready for fucking snow because it's happened before. It happens every fucking year, multiple times. But for some reason, people that have lived here their entire lives are still fucking frightened at the prospect of snow. I tell you, that one stretch I go through on my commute, I don't give a shit. I just don't fucking care. Try to get wherever you gotta go. Just try it. Fucking try it. If you can't, you can't. If you can, you did. It's not like you fucking slayed a dragon or cured disease. You're not to be heralded. You're not to be punished. If it's impossible to get somewhere, it's fucking impossible. That's just the end of it. The worrying aspect fucking irritates me to no fucking end. But it's snowing out. What am I gonna do? We'll never get bread again. We'll never taste milk. We'll never know what it's like to have enjoyable Captain Crunch. I don't understand the rush for milk and bread. Like, listen, how many people just don't have fucking milk and bread? Like, it's obvious that a lot of people don't have these things, okay? I understand that there are poor people. Hey, well, I'll have you know, Ken, there's a lot of households that nobody does have milk or bread. Yeah, well, why are they at the fucking store stockpiling it for a fucking 6-hour shut-in? Why? What are they buying pints? Are they buying it by the slice? Either have it or don't. You can't go a fucking day without goddamn milk or bread. I don't fucking understand it, and it irritates the shit out of me. It fucking bugs me. Everybody, and oh, we better get a shovel. We better get a shovel. How is there always a run on milk, bread, and fucking shovels every fucking storm? And it's not even the fucking first storm of the year. Like, I could understand the idea or the elation of it being fucking spring. And the last snowflake melts. And people are so overjoyed, they just fucking throw their goddamn shovels into the road and drive over them. Never have to do that again! Fuck it! Snow free, bitch! Never gonna do it! I don't care! Fuck it! See you do that in August! And then all of a sudden the snow comes back and, oh, well, I'm completely shovel-less. Apparently my fucking victory dance against winter was thwarted again by winter. I don't know. You're always gonna have it. If you live here, you're always gonna have it. Just fucking expect it. Now, there's other parts of the country where, you know, for example, where Walter Sobchak lives in Texas, if they got fucking 6 inches of snow, that would be a goddamn fucking a divine intervention of punishment against his entire area. They're just not ready for it. They would be completely shut down. Everything would be fucked up. But eventually it would fucking melt, and then everything would be cool. There's certain parts where they're not ready for snow. We're fucking fine! I don't need your goddamn Weather Channel email letting me know it's gonna fucking snow. I've interacted with one person at least today, so I know it's gonna fucking snow. Holy shit, I'm in a bad fucking mood. I'm in a bad fucking mood. Now, maybe it's because I was a little late getting to the program. Getting to the program, I say. As if I had to drive to some fucking studio where an angry producer was tapping on his watch and handing me my cup of joe and telling me, you've got 10 minutes! No. I went to my house. This is the place where I make everything happen. From wasting hours watching pornography to thinking about doing something to doing this to having a goddamn cockapoo ruin my fucking life. This is where it all happens, folks. And this is where I went. And I arrived here late. And I didn't get the jump on doing the show right away. I think I started around 9:05 for the live listeners. Those of you who aren't live, you don't give a fuck. You might not even give a fuck that you're listening to this right now. And you know what? And there's something special about that. And I want to thank you. I'm already tired of hearing about the Arizona shooter. Not in the fact that, you know, I have a lack of sympathy for the people and the families involved and all that shit. And all that shit that you have to say. But in reality, like, you hear about it and then you go play your fucking Xbox. It's a major tragedy. It sucks. But, like, I'm just desensitized to shit like that because when I hear about it, it's always by these slimy fucking news channels and outlets and broadcasters. These slimy fucking ambulance-chasing motherfuckers that just have to get their dumb little face as early as they can into the story. So when you think about death and horror and murder and everything bad, you'll remember, hey, that somewhat fucking Spanish guy with the glasses, that was the guy that I heard about at first. He was the first one to speak to a classmate of the kid who killed people. Wow. Wow, what a career-making moment. And it happens every single time something goes wrong. Every time there's some outrage or some terrible event or someone gets killed or a crime is committed or all of the above, they'll bring out somebody's fucking friend or somebody's neighbor. And I know the usual response is, he's so quiet. Well, lately, these people realize that they can get a lot of attention by knowing these people. So what the usual response is like, oh, you know, I saw a change in him. It went from, he just kept to himself, blah, blah, blah. Now it's, I saw a change in him. And then you hear that person say it over and fucking over. After they've been told that secret. After they've been clued into the fact that you could extend your run if you just say, oh, he was a great guy. I saw a change in him. Well, this particular classmate, I think it was Caitlin Parker, was interviewed on the scene, or wherever the fuck, I don't know, whatever dumb flashing fucking word made out of light bulbs you want to apply to this. They interviewed her first on this one channel. I think it might have been CNN. And every question is just trying to paint this guy as a psychotic, a political zealot, somebody who's just really out to make a name for himself. And obviously, it's a fucking obvious case of that. Do we need affirmation from someone who fucking had world cultures with him in 1999? Like, do I give a shit if the person who learned about igneous rock with this killer shares that sentiment that we've all fucking jumped to already? We've all just decided that that's the case? Are we going to change our minds if she says otherwise? No. But I loved it because this, in this particular interview, it completely fucking backfired. Because this person hadn't been prepped, I guess. They didn't know how to get their distance out of the story. And all they said was, he was very, very nice. The answer, well, did you, in your dealings with whatever the fuck the guy's name, listen, I'm not a news outlet. I'm a guy in a fucking striped shirt. Every week I wear a fucking green striped shirt and yell at a dog. Okay? Don't fucking criticize me for not getting the goddamn facts right on something you and I both don't give a shit about. You can pretend you give a shit about it on your fucking blogs that you comment on. Roll up your sleeves and fucking put a furrow in your brow and write angry words at someone who says something bad. But you and I both know that it didn't affect you personally, unless it did, which I'm really sorry to hear about. The guy was a complete maniac. And, you know, they should have stopped him. They should have stopped him. But in this particular interview, every answer was, he was really nice when I knew him. And then he would revise the question and basically deliver it the same way. Well, I mean, did you see any, like, sort of obsession with politics in him? And then the answer changed for me. It was really nice to, like, hey, look, the last time I saw him was 3 years ago. And then there was the most glorious awkward pause you could ever imagine after every single question. Until early to the scene, early and first on the story guy, basically just had to just throw it back to the studio. And every time they went back to him, he said, well, she said that she did notice some kind of change, and that although she didn't know him for the last 3 years, and then he would put his spin on it. Whereas in the interview, the entire focus was that this person that they're bringing on is like an expert witness into the psychotic nature of this shooter, had no fucking knowledge of the guy 3 years ago, or for the last 3 years. Think about how someone has changed over 3 years. Think about someone you know that you didn't see in years. It's completely likely that they're at a point now, after having not, you know, after you not even being party to their life, that they could just go off and fucking kill somebody. 3 years ago, it's really a very fucking long time. There's a lot of days and a lot of things that could go wrong in somebody's fucking life, and you're not going to necessarily have the fucking scoop. But they pull your name out of a hat because you're willing to speak, and you just fucking go. And you say your little fucking thing, and you get passed around from network to network, and eventually you shape it up until you're a credible witness. And, hey, look, he was nice. I don't know him. I didn't see him. He was very political. But I did notice a change. Hideous. And even more hideous than that, than the supposed friend, which is really just an acquaintance at this point, even more hideous than that, that reading the last tweets posted by the congresswoman who was shot through the fucking brain and is trying to hang on to life, as some fucking neurological expert is describing how she might have to spend her days should she survive this. She's stable now, but it's going to be a tough... Just shut the fuck up. I can't stand it because beyond the fake concerned expression on this neurological expert's face, you can see unbridled joy poking through the fucking taut skin of her eyelids and fucking forehead. Unbridled joy that she gets to dust off her best fucking shoulder padded suit and get on TV and talk about the horror that's going to be the remainder of this woman's days. And what do they reduce it to? Reading shit from her social graph. Her fucking final tweets, which basically promoted the event that I guess the shooter came to and fucking basically made everything happen. He made it all go down. And so you kind of think like, well, I guess that's really all that's left. The things that you leave on this permanent internet will be the only things people have to reach to. The only things that people will be left to look back on when you die. So you post to your Facebook or your Twitter and you have a picture of you getting fucked up New Year's Eve. You're going to die. That's going to be there. And people are going to fucking look at that. When you finally expire, that's what people are going to look at to reminisce. You getting fucked up. Oh, he really did love to get fucked up on New Year's Eve. Oh, yeah. Remember when he pissed himself at that person that we don't even know? Like, it's their house, I guess. But, like, he posted the picture. He really wanted to share this moment with his friends. Or remember when he partook in a trending topic on Twitter to let all the girls know how they need to act? Just fucking terrible. Absolutely terrible. And then I think, wait a minute, I'm going to die. And I've got nearly 300 at this point episodes of a podcast that really are far from any legacy I would hope to have. Like, if you think about it, if you think about, like, the legacy that you'll leave behind when you die, it's really fucking pathetic. Like, if you're not the leader of a country, if you don't affect somebody's life in any way, if you just bullshit on the internet, the collection, the accumulation of little tweets and blog posts and comments and snarky bullshit that is going to outlive you for many, many fucking years. I almost said generation. From generations. Meanwhile, the shit that we have now is going to look like about as absurd as when we had to load Kid Grid from a goddamn cassette and wait a fucking hour to play a game that you can download in a fucking microsecond and play on a fucking phone or a calculator. What we have now is going to look so fucking shitty. It's gonna look like the console on the fucking TIE fighters in Empire Strikes Back, which actually had wood grain. It's an outer space movie, but they had fucking wood grain on the fucking console. I'm sure they had probably just some dressed up 8-track player. But the shit that we leave behind is gonna be so fucking just hideous, pathetic, and embarrassing. For anybody who wants to look back on our lives with some kind of awe. And it's a little bit fucking sad. And people like Goatweed who avoid being in pictures and really try to keep themselves out of what they do online, they'll have a better experience. It'll be possible for someone who knows the man behind Goatweed to look back on his life and have a more like romanticized vision of the person he was. They won't have to see. Now I'm just going to go on Twitter and look at any trending topic. Right now there is a Krusty Krab pizza is a trending fucking topic. I have no fucking idea what that is. No idea whatsoever. But let's say this person here, better yet, I'm going to search for something else. Okay. I'm searching for a random word on Twitter. Let's just say that iMason Zero dies. All that's going to be left is, I feel you, nigga. No disrespect, LOL. He really did feel that nigga. He really did. He felt everybody in this motherfucking life. He felt everybody. Like, you can't look at the shit that people did with their life and even feel fucking sad anymore. Because you see it and it's just a collection of shit. I look at my own shit. I look snarky comments on Twitter and shitty blog posts and posts on fucking forums and hour-long episodes of a fucking podcast. That's what I'm going to leave behind. And it'll last as long as the fucking bills are paid. And as long as people have them on their fucking computers. And that just fucking frightens me. That I'm going to be dead. And there's still a chance that someone will hear this fucking horseshit. I want a lot of people to hear it while I'm alive. But when I'm dead, I don't want anybody to fucking hear it. It's fucking embarrassing. Because I probably didn't achieve any of the goals that I had in my life. If I had lofty goals, I probably didn't fucking achieve them. It's not like I'm John Wooden, who like, you could fucking look back, like, oh, the dude fucking was inspirational. He changed lives. He was a great coach. Fucking, I'm not. I'm a guy who talks in a fucking microphone and has a family. But to my family, I'm special. But because I put this shit out there, there's going to be people that just listen to this shit and go, God, what a monumental waste of a fucking life. The shit he could have done with this. If he just took his time and did something else. Why do I do it? That's the question it goes back to then. Well, if it's not that special and, you know, you don't want it to be your legacy, well, why do you do it? Well, why do you fucking play Farmville? Why do you fucking grow carrots on Facebook? Why have I all of a sudden gone against everything I fucking believe in the most embarrassing fashion to fucking run a cafe on fucking Facebook? Why have I slipped into the category of person who wants to fucking run an imaginary fucking business to sell fake pies on fucking Facebook? You pass goddamn time. You fucking play a little game. You get a little synapse in your fucking brain. And it's a new fucking feeling. And then eventually, it just keeps going. And you get it, you feel like, oh, I can't stop doing this. I've got way too many cherry pies to fucking serve. Otherwise, my cafe's not going to be as popping. Or I have to do shows every week. Otherwise, what? The difference is I like doing this now. But is it all I want to be left behind? You know what I want left behind? I want a fucking dog skin rug with a laminated picture of my smiling face in the middle of it. I swear to God, every time that fucking door gets fucking scratched, I don't know what the fuck I'm gonna do. So you bullshit online. And maybe it's not important. And yeah, it's probably forever. But I guess the real issue, and I'm resolving this now. Like, I'm not, this isn't like a, obviously it's not a prepped thing. It's just kind of a thought I had that it's like kind of troubling that when I'm dead, this is going to be around. in some way or another, I'm going to be gone and this is it. Like when my grandfather died, and you go through somebody's stuff when they die. My grandfather died when I was 12, and you know, we found some of his stuff from when he was a fucking kid. He saw his name written in crayon on a project he made. And it makes you feel like this person is a human and they lived a full life. Are you going to get that same feeling when you hear an MP3 of someone talking about their fucking piss drips when they're dead? Is it possible? Like if there was video and as much capability for media when my grandfather was a kid, and that shit was out there. And you could see exactly what the type of person the guy was, exactly what he produced, exactly how he spoke, joked around, and all that. Would it be as bittersweet or nice to look back on as just a mere hint that the person was actually just a person? I think it's nice to have the videos of people that have passed on, so you can remember what they sound like, and you can remember the minor idiosyncrasies, the movements, and you see them when they were alive, moving and interacting, and you can kind of relive that experience. But I think we're in a time now where there's just too fucking much of it, that it almost makes it impossible to fucking to grieve effectively. I don't know. I was brought it was brought to my attention, there was a site called 1000 Memories, which was started because some web developer's friend died, and it's tough because I guess he was a young person, they're all young people, and the guy died at a young age, and he would kind of reminisce about the person's life on Facebook on the guy's profile. So the same profile that probably had like a status of like, fucking Jimmy, stop being such a fucking faggot, drink, faggot, faggot. Probably had that same status, was now just a wall filled with, oh, I can't believe he's gone, or happy birthday, like every time his birthday passed after he died, or like, remember the canoe trip when he fucking made somebody shit their pants because he put fucking Visine in. I'm really making this guy's dead friend sound like a complete asshole, and I really know nothing about the I just know that this is the inspiration for starting it, because after enough interaction on that page, Facebook actually deleted it. They deleted the guy from Facebook, deactivated his account, and this guy made this 1000 Memories site, and it's really just a collection of pictures, videos, and stories about like an individual dead person, much like you'd have a MySpace or some kind of profile when you're living. These people make these online shrines for the dead, and they go there to grieve. And it's like, years ago, you would plant someone in the ground because, I guess, whatever religion you subscribe to or whatever social convention you have says that's what you do. And you go there because that's where they are, and that's, I guess, the closest you can feel connected to them. And that's just what people did. They would go to stand before this monument or sit there on a fucking blanket and talk about old times. And now they're creating entire sites dedicated to dead people with pictures and everything. And I don't know what to think of it. I don't know if this is really a good way to grieve. I mean, what happens when 4chan posts a fucking link to like your dead aunt and says, this cunt just fucking died, troll, lol, lol, lol. And then, like, people start saying, I remember the time she fucking sucked the corn right out of my asshole and fucking spit it into a shot glass and fucking made me piss into it. And then we shared corn piss shots and fucked all night. Like, I don't know. I really don't know where the fuck I'm going with that. Like, I guess the thing is, I'm really feeling like confused now about fucking death, because it's all I'm thinking about is your end, my end, the end that has already come and gone for people that I'm close to. And I see that we're moving more towards reading fucking tweets and looking at dumb fucking duck face pictures rather than going to a grave site. It's where we're headed. We share way too much for it to not be where we're headed. And it's, I mean, as depressing as it is to just hang out in front of a fucking stone and look at a name and two dates, maybe there's enough distance there for you, for it to be healthier. Maybe then you realize I should have probably enjoyed more time with the person on services like ICU2. I could have interacted face to face with them on ICU2 from any place. Like, let's say they get, they have to move somewhere because of a job or because of some family obligation. And now, oh my God, I'm left without this person that I truly care about. Well, I can just go on ICU2 and we can see each other and type. And we don't have to bullshit each other with LOLs that really aren't LOLs because your screenshot accompanies your text. So if you truly LOL, then they'll know that you're not full of fucking shit. And if you want to try it, it's free to try. It's ICU2. Go to ICU2.com. Download it. Give it a shot. Listen, there's big fucking things happening at ICU2. Huge fucking things. New version rolling out soon. I'm talking about fucking Mac rooms, Mac version of software rather, where you don't need to just, oh, I have Windows. I'm so fucking superior. I think I'm above everybody. Well, wait, I have Mac. Can I use it? Guess what? Soon you can. ICU2 is probably the greatest technological advancement that we've made as human beings. So download it today. Go to ICU2.com, and you're going to be running with the 2009 People's Choice Award winner for internet communication. Now, I know what you're saying, like, hey, wait a minute, is this an old episode? It's not. I know. I'm fully acknowledging that it's 2011 right now. But let me tell you something. One thing you need to know about ICU2, the staff, they're not fucking greedy, okay? They're ready for other people to try. Hey, let me know who the People's Choice Award winner was for 2010. And I'll also let you know what a piece of shit service that is when you compare it to ICU2. That's ICU2.com. You know, there's a point where you realize you're just fucking old and you don't mean shit and you're not exciting anymore. And I know that this is like, you probably think, like, God, enough about ICU2. I'm done with that. We've already tried it, and we're going to just fucking totally be face-to-face with that. But there's a point in your life, everybody hits it, where you realize you are just a fucking ancient, completely irrelevant human that nobody would ever want to expect new excitement from. And it kind of begins when you catch yourself, like, you're doing work or something, and you have some fucking background noise or this or that, and then you realize, oh, I'm singing along to extreme? I'm singing more than words? And I'm not just doing it, like, ironically, I'm really fucking singing the shit out of fucking more than words while painting a living room? And I'm not really all that upset with it. Like, I'm enjoying the fact that I'm doing this. Saying I love you is not the way I wanted my fucking life to go. I'm painting a living room and listening to this, and I'm not even upset at where I am at this stage in my fucking life, singing along to one of the faggiest fucking songs. And I'm like, I'm picking between the parts in the harmony. It's the most pathetic moment of my fucking life. I realize that. Because when you're not old, you'll hear that song and you'll be like, you know, listen, don't fucking tell anybody. But I kind of like this song. Dude, it's fucking... Listen, I kind of like it, but don't pay attention to what I'm saying. Dude, that song is so fucking gay. Dude, turn it off. Turn it up. Seriously, turn it up. Increase the volume. Louden it. No, dude, it's fucking gay. But then you realize, hey, listen, like, I like more than words by extreme. And if I'm by myself, or if I'm in a car with the windows rolled up, I'm gonna sing so fucking hard that maybe like half of one of my balls goes up under my abdomen. I'm gonna really fucking put all my fucking gusto, effort, love, and fucking soul into this shit fucking terrible goddamn fucking song. And it's terrible and I fucking love it. And then you realize, hey, I've sung every song that I've heard this fucking evening. And then you realize, holy shit, it's fucking late night and I'm listening to goddamn Delilah. not the skinny white fucking whatever song. Not that Hey There Delilah. I'm talking about the syndicated call-in romance advice / love song request show. I am listening to fucking Delilah while painting a living room. And I'm not all that fucking upset about it. That's when I realized that I'm completely fucking irrelevant. And I should be put down. I honestly should be put the fuck down. I'm listening to this fucking show, which she describes. She self-describes her show. And not like me where I say it's, I don't know, I just talk about, look, we all shit and piss. And some of us talk about it in the DJ New Style show. Like, that's the best I can do to describe it. She says, the show is a safety zone where listeners take off their armor, slip into a Mr. Rogers cardigan, sit around the electronic hearth, and share their secrets. Delilah! What the fuck happened to me? Huh? You might just say, "What, dude, what are you doing?" And I would say, I have no fucking clue. I really don't know. But you need to know that when I work on the house, all I have is a radio. And all it gets is one fucking station. Okay? It's all it gets. It gets light rock or whatever the fuck it is. Or you get maybe you get a little Billy Joel. Okay? Maybe you get a little rockin' Elton John. Something like that. And then, you know, late night rolls around. You've been doing a lot of work in the house. And Delilah comes on. Hi. I'm Delilah. And I'm going to solve all your problems by playing shitty fucking romantic songs from 1993. It really is fucking miserable. And this has happened to me several times where I'm working on the house and it's so late that her fucking show comes on. And it's nothing but, like, sappy top 40 romantic songs like More Than Words by Extreme or, like, Bonnie Raitt or whatever. And I've become familiar with her show, and I've decided to do this thing where I put the face to the voice. You hear a voice long enough, you have an image of how it looks in your head. And so I decided one day, like, I'm like, I really wonder what the fuck this Delilah looks like. And I think this happens to anybody who listens to any form of radio and actually remembers the name of the person. And she has the widest spectrum of Google image search attractiveness of all time. I'll call it GISA or GISA. Google image search attractiveness spectrum. GISAs. It's where the average picture is probably what they look like on their best day. And then there's their most attractive picture, which is they never look like that. And then there's their fucking like homeliest like picture ever. So like with her, she's like 50 years old. She looks like a 50-year-old woman who makes lunches and shit. Like, that's what she really looks like. But they have this one picture of her, like, on a promo where she looks like she's fucking 19 years old, and she looks fucking, relative to the stats, 50 years old, she looks pretty goddamn good in this picture. And you know it's not that. Such is the wide spectrum of the gizzas. Google image search attractiveness scale or spectrum. I haven't decided what I want to go with this yet. She has something like 13 fucking adopted kids, and she's single. Hosts a fucking romance advice show, I guess, where callers ask for advice, and they request songs, and basically Delilah just gives these fucking Hallmark card stock lines and remedies all the problems. All the problems that these callers present, the big solution, the big answer that Delilah gives is like some Amy Grant. She'll play a fucking Amy Grant song. Like, someone called in, it's Delilah, I love my man. My husband died in 1991. God love him. He was an incredible man, but I've been blessed twice, and I found another man I love very much. But the problem is he lives 1,400 miles away, and we only see each other every other month, and we make the best of it, but it's put a strain on the relationship. Delilah, what should I do? What should I do? And then Delilah always chimes in with something shitty. Well, it's a tough thing, Mary, but you've got to let love find its way. Now, I'll see what I can do for you. And then she'll just play a fucking song. Thanks for the call, Mary. Hopefully everything works out with this catch-all solution to your terrible, heartbreaking dilemma that you've decided to publicize on this fucking syndicated show. Here it is. This is the answer. Just listen and smile. Just fucking terrible. But God damn it, I don't know. I don't know what's wrong with me. I don't turn it off. What am I going to listen to? Silence? I need something. And occasionally there's a rockin' song like Extreme. So I'll do that. And then I guess I just have to accept that this is where I'm at. Working on a house that's never going to be the way I like it. Listening to shit music and kind of loving it. And I remember when I heard that exact call, like I remembered that call, it stuck with me. This woman was reaching out to this radio host. She's fucking lovelorn and her fucking heart aches. And I don't know what she's expecting, but she got a healthy dose of Leanne Rimes. And as I'm hearing her plight, like this really like just this story that makes you feel for her, like we, you know what it's like and shit, and you hear someone at their wit's end, they're at the end of their rope, they've resorted to calling a radio show, and as I'm hearing it and feeling her pain, I am putting a gallon of diarrhea into a fucking toilet, like the worst shit ever. All weekend, I have had the worst gas, and this is the culmination of that event. Listening to this fucking pity party on the fucking radio and just expelling pure acid shit into a fucking toilet. After a weekend that left my pants smelling like a fucking stew pot that someone left on unwashed overnight. The bottom of a stew pot where maybe it's been out a few days and the stew is like kind of just dried into the fucking enamel. Just hideous. And I wonder, like, this is where she's reaching out. And I guess she's trying to get some comfort. And her story and Delilah's attempt at solving it has become the soundtrack to one of the most horrific things that I could possibly muster at that point. But I have to believe there's got to be something infinitely worse that was the soundtrack to. I bet you this woman is pouring her fucking heart out. And someone is having sex with a fucking one of their pets. Someone is murdering somebody in a car while Delilah's, well, you need to let love find its way and realize that God would not let us suffer unjustly. I'll see what I can do for you. How do I live without you? I want to know. Just fucking hideous. Absolutely hideous. I don't know. I really, really do not know. But I know I'm not alone. I know there's people that listen to this fucking show that are at the same point that I'm at. You know you're fucking lame, and you're kind of okay with it. I'm kind of okay with singing extreme. I'm at the point where I'm kind of okay just belting out shit fucking songs to myself. And, like, to the point where if someone, like, I wouldn't even fucking gasp or turn around and be fucking embarrassed if someone just popped in on me. I wouldn't give a fuck. I don't care. And there's something very, very comforting in all of that. I want to thank everybody for listening to this episode of the DJ Neustyle Show. I really, it was all I could do to not end this episode with fucking more than words. I still love Rammstein better. And it's not as though I'm gonna go out and celebrate their fucking catalog and fill up MP3 players and playlists with it. But if it comes on, I'm gonna fucking enjoy it. Saying I love you just doesn't go with this beat, but could it?
Saying I love you is not the only way to...
Alright, fuck it. DJNewStyleShow.com. Check out everything on Hear Us Talk. HearUsTalk.com. ICU2. And don't forget Rorschach. That's HearUsTalk.com/WhoIsHe.